10. The living room seemed smaller as I paced around it, my hands unable to relax. This isn't good. Your henchman killed that guy right in front of witnesses, I blurted. Francois had dropped us at the hotel before speeding off in the borrowed sedan.
Do you think so little of our operations, Rexford?
Hunter sat on the couch, eyeing me cautiously. What the hell is that supposed to mean? Marcus and Tripp were quiet as they eavesdropped from a distance, neither willing to exit the kitchen.
It means everything is taken care of.
Go on, talk us through it, Hunter, I urged.
Fine. The Mercedes was bought by Francois from a chop shop. The plates lifted a few hours ago. The sedan is a burner car, already heading under an overpass farther down the five. The four houses nearest Cal Harkin's home were using the same surveillance security company, and I've paid to have the footage deleted due to a software glitch.
Hunter looked pleased with himself. What about us? Our faces? Veronica asked.
You hardly resembled Veronica Jones and Rex Walker, did you? You were Frank and Chantel Winkle, working for Park Place Movies, which you will find no longer exists in any capacity.
Hunter went to stand and groaned as he began to walk.
If you'll excuse me, I need sleep.
He stopped near the hallway, turning slowly.
Before I go, can I see it?
I reached into my breast pocket and pulled the token out. I rotated it and stared at the engraved symbol. It looked like the letter R, but upside down, with a wave that could be a simplistic bird above it. This is it. The fourth token. Veronica grabbed it from me, walking it over to Hunter.
I hope this is worth killing a man over.
Hunter smiled, just enough to show part of his teeth.
My dear, when we have all six, you will see, and we'll learn how important this genuinely is. And that man is a believer. By your description, he's one of the Sovereign's most trusted hitmen. You say he's the same man that had been trailing you?
That was him, I reassured Hunter.
Then more will come. When word hits the Sovereign that his sidekick is gone, he'll retaliate.
How did they know about the party? What aren't you telling us?
Tripp asked from the kitchen, breaking his silence. Hunter was starting to lose control and the trust of his group.
I can't know everything. I set these precautions in place because I don't want anyone to calculate our steps. But they have a knack for predicting our movements. It could be.
Don't say it, I muttered.
The cult leaders have always suggested there might be advantages to attuning.
Marcus walked out holding a cup of coffee.
You're not saying these weirdos are seeing the future, are you?
No, nothing of the sort.
Hunter rotated the token and kept looking at it as he spoke.
Attuning is mostly a meditation, an art they plan on using to connect with the unknowns. If you ask me, they're full of it, but they did predict the arrival of the objects, so who knows for sure?
I crossed the living room, not willing to leave the token in Hunter's possession. I had the rest in my bag, as was part of the arrangement. He frowned, with his fingers latched around it, and finally returned it to my palm. His hand trembled as he passed it to me. I almost expected him to call the token his precious and scurry down the hall.
What do we do?
Marcus asked.
We keep on, Hunter said. Get some rest and leave in 5 hours. Everything has been arranged, and Veronica, I'll need you to pilot the jet. I'm afraid that with Christmas in 2 days, finding someone to shuttle us to Punta Arenas was impossible.
He walked off, reaching out to balance himself as he ventured toward his room. Veronica leaned against the back of the couch.
Punta Arenas?
Marcus nodded, bringing out his phone.
Rex, can we tell them? If we can't trust Tripp and Ronnie, then who's left?
I almost didn't grasp who he was talking about, but he'd shortened her name.
Go ahead.
We'll be there soon. Marcus indicated a spot on his map.
There.
Where the hell is that?
Tripp asked, squinting to see. Marcus zoomed out and the location became obvious.
Antarctica.
We're going to search for a token in the South Pole.
That's about the gist of it, I said, grinning. Spending Christmas at the South Pole, you do realize that's the wrong end of the world, right? Santa's workshop is at the other pole?
Veronica quipped. Jokes were good. It meant she wasn't freaking out from tonight, and the last thing we needed was our pilot losing grip with our final destination in hand. Everyone fine with this? I know we've come far, but if anyone wants to back out now, I won't hold it against you, I told them.
Tripp's arms crossed over his chest and he lowered his chin.
Hunter will be pissed, though. From the looks of things, you don't want to end up on his bad side. I suspect he'd dispose of us without a second thought, not that I'd let him.
I contemplated the casual manner in which Francois had disposed of the armed cultist and shook my head.
I suppose you're right. See you in a few hours.
Tripp and Veronica walked off without another word, and Marcus hung back with me.
Rex, this is getting heated. What's going to happen when we find the fifth token? Can we go home?
He asked, and for the first time, I wondered at that very answer.
I don't see why not, I lied.
Hunter wouldn't hurt us. I was almost sure of it.
What about texting? I want to talk to my mom and dad, tell them Merry Christmas before we're down south with no connection, he said.
Hunter had ordered us to refrain from any contact with home, but I didn't see the harm in it. Plus, I wanted to let Bev know that I was okay too.
Go for it, just be quick about it.
He smiled and wandered off for his room. I sighed, checking the clock. 2 a.m. I used the washroom, enjoying the normality of washing my face and brushing my teeth, and ended up in my room 10 minutes later with my cell phone in my hand. I checked my email, finding a backlog of messages, some from Jessica, others from Richard, students, old friends and colleagues, and a string of unanswered texts from Bev. I hadn't been reading them because I was trying to focus on the tokens, but I clicked the latest. Beverly.
Rex, I'm really beginning to worry. I've heard from Richard Klein, Dad's old associate, and he's concerned you're into something dangerous. Call me.
I read a few more and witnessed the growing anxiety creeping into her messages. Rex.
Hey, sis, sorry. I've been incommunicado. Don't mind Richard. He's been acting peculiar. I'm fine. I'm almost out of cell range, so you and the kids have a very Merry Christmas. I'll be home before New Year's, and I'll come visit as soon as I'm close.
I read the text and wondered about committing to a timeline. It would be fine. Once we found token number 5, I'd demand Hunter bring us home, at least until we figured out the next move. It was past 5 a.m. for Bev, and I didn't expect her to read the text for a couple of hours yet. Instead of going to sleep, I went to my browser, reading headlines. The phone showed me some big news from the last places I'd visited, and I scrolled over talk about protests in Paris and an emerging alien watch in Sydney. The image displayed a group of people, half of them with aluminum foil wrapped around their heads. I was about to shut the phone off when I saw a caption describing a fire in New York. I clicked it and almost dropped the cell. There had been a fire in the building across from the Museum of Natural History. It had started on the 9th floor and half of the residents were affected. Brian Hardy had lived on that story. The believers had gotten to him. Before I could tell Marcus, Tripp was calling through my door.
Boss man says we're moving.
He banged on it twice, and I heard him shout the same message into Veronica's room adjacent to mine. We landed bleary-eyed and beat. The trip had taken longer than we'd hoped, with delays at every corner. Landing in southern Chile had been simple, but departing in the smaller commissioned plane for our final destination in Antarctica had proven more difficult. A storm hit, a deluge so heavy, Hunter had to bribe someone to eventually let Veronica take off. The subsequent flight had been shaky, but our team member proved how valuable she was, unflinching in the face of danger. I, on the other hand, was white-knuckled and silently praying to anyone that would listen for most of the flight.
"Where is this place?"
Tripp asked as he stared into the white expanse through his tiny window.
"Private research base. Their funding recently ended, and everyone vacated a week ago,"
Hunter advised him.
"Convenient," I mumbled.
"Very."
Hunter had a way of getting what he wanted. Whose pockets did one line to evacuate a small research facility in the middle of the South Pole? The base was visible from the landing stretch, which was thankfully clear of piled snow. Considering the barren landscape, the landing had been smooth and effortless compared with the rest of the flight. Veronica shut the engines off and we opened the door after donning our parkas, boots, gloves, and hats. It was cold outside. Not just cold, but freezing beyond anything I'd ever imagined. The base was only a few hundred yards from the plane, but in this temperature it seemed like a deadly distance.
"This isn't natural,"
Marcus called as he jogged for the research camp. It looked cold and lifeless on stilts in the snow. The lights were all off, and snow drifted along the outer edge, coming almost as high as a window. The complex was larger than I'd expected, with a main building and three smaller portable units. We made for the primary research facility, my eyelashes already frozen, and Hunter stopped at the entrance. There was a keypad with 10 digits, and he blankly stared at them for a moment.
"Don't you have the code?"
Marcus asked, and Hunter waved him away.
"Quiet. I didn't keep notes. I didn't want anyone to find the information," he said.
The cold was already seeping into my bones, and I wiggled my toes inside the boots while I flexed my hands. Hunter tried a 4-digit code, but nothing happened.
"Come on, Hunter," Tripp said. "You must have remembered it."
"Yes. I'm afraid my medication..."
He turned, peering past me at the sun, which didn't set this time of year at the South Pole. It reflected brightly off the pristine snow. He whispered to himself, and we tried to give him space. I was already considering how we could break into one of the portables using what we had on us. Hunter finally returned to the lock, and with a smile of triumph, it clicked after receiving the proper code.
"I knew I'd have it. Just took a moment to thaw out my brain."
We hustled inside, and it was far warmer, though nowhere near comfortable. It was clearly insulated, but when I tried to turn the lights on, they remained powered off.
"Do you have a manual?"
I asked Hunter. Marcus set his pack down and stomped through the front entrance.
"The maintenance room should be over here. I'll see if I can help."
Veronica dropped her bag and followed Marcus. She used to be a mechanic, and I suspected that would help today. The office was clean, with 3 long desks lining the far wall. 5 swivel chairs sat empty, 2 of them facing the exit. A series of screens had been left behind, and a couple of keyboards lingered on the desks. Behind them were bookshelves full of hardcover textbooks and research material. The windows were tall, showcasing a beautiful bay a short distance from the facility. Before I'd had a chance to investigate any other rooms, the lights flickered on, then off, and stayed on a moment later. Marcus let out a cheer from somewhere, and I heard Veronica laughing. Radiators clinked near me, and I smiled as heat emitted from the pipes. It was probably a good thing the research team had recently departed the facility. Various Christmas decorations were up, with a miniature tree decorated near the living room. It was plugged in, and the moment the power was on, it started blinking white lights. They hadn't planned on leaving for home until Hunter had pulled some strings. Marcus and Veronica entered, my sidekick looking far too pleased with himself.
"Told you I could do stuff."
"I never doubted you. Not for a second." We explored the base, finding 2 rooms with bunks, 4 beds in one, 2 in the other. Hunter and Tripp claimed the smaller, and Marcus called dibs on the top bunk over mine. Veronica smiled as she removed her oversized winter gear. I wore jeans with long underwear beneath and a thick sweatshirt, while Marcus rifled through his bag to grab a hoodie. We were all going to be wearing multiple layers to stay as warm as we could.
"Still cold in here, no matter how high you crank it,"
he said, donning the warm fleece layer.
"Rex, can I speak to you for a moment?"
Veronica asked, and Marcus slinked from the room, asking where the food was.
"What's up?"
I asked.
She
sat on the bottom bunk, stretching her legs, as she regarded me with bright blue eyes.
"Go on, you have something to say." "I haven't told you everything."
Her hair was in a top bun, and pieces of it stuck out the sides, a wayward strand falling over her forehead.
"That's not surprising. I haven't told you everything either,"
I said, trying to make this easier on her. She was struggling to reveal a secret to me.
"Wait, you're not going to tell me you're the sovereign, are you?"
I laughed, but Veronica didn't smile. This was serious.
"Nothing like that. Honestly, I've heard of the believers, but they always seemed like phantoms, not real."
"Then what?" She swallowed, and I sat beside her, taking her hand. It was cold, but she didn't try to pull away.
"I didn't know when to say it because Hunter would have—"
"Come out here,"
Tripp's voice carried from the living room, but I stayed put.
"What are you trying to tell me?"
I asked. Veronica looked at the exit.
"It's not like I wanted—"
"Now!"
Tripp's voice was louder.
"We'll talk later, okay?"
Veronica stood, dashing out of the bunk room. I followed, finding Tripp holding a satellite phone.
They're here.
Who is? I asked. Hunter's eyes were wide.
They found us. Despite our precautions, they followed us.
Wait, what are you saying?
I ran to the windows, searching for signs of someone in the blustery cold outside.
Not yet, but my contact at the airport says the plane departed 5 minutes ago. The believers are coming for us. They must know we're about to get the fifth token, and they're making their move. This confirms my suspicion that they have the sixth already. I predicted they'd come for the tokens when we returned to the U.S. mainland, but they're losing patience,
Hunter exclaimed. Tripp's pack rested on the couch, and he unzipped it, pulling the M4A1 from inside.
We need to go now, he said.
Where?
Marcus asked.
To the token. There's a chance we can recover it and leave before they land,
Tripp said. No way. We've barely slept. Veronica has been awake for 2 days, and we haven't even checked to see if the vehicle is fueled up, I reminded everyone. Veronica nodded once.
I can do it. You take the transport, grab the token, and I'll bring the plane.
Where are you going to land it? We haven't planned for the terrain, I said.
I'll find a spot close enough to you. Don't worry about that. Hunter, you can stay with me, she told him.
Her expression from the bedroom had etched into my mind, and I feared betrayal from her. We'd spent a lot of time together over the last 10 days or so, but she remained a stranger. She'd admitted to tracking Madison to Sydney, and God knew what she was trying to tell me just now.
I don't think it's a good idea. Too bad, Walker. It's the only one that has us leaving alive and with the token. Hunter, you good with helping Veronica?
Tripp asked our benefactor.
I suppose I'll have to be. I won't be much use to you out there.
He gawked at the exit, and I sighed. Marcus ran for the bunk rooms, complaining about not eating as he gathered our things. When he returned, Marcus gave Hunter the destination on a tablet, and the old man clutched it like a lifeline. We dressed as quickly as we could, adding layers for the cold, and less than an hour after arriving at the research facility, we were leaving. Once everyone was bundled up, we departed, Hunter moving for the plane. Veronica stopped and grabbed my arm while Marcus and Tripp ran for the garage.
I'm sorry, Rex, I really am. If we make it through, I promise to tell you everything.
The air bit my nose and I scrunched up my face while returning the scarf over it.
How can I trust you're on our side?
Have faith.
She shifted closer and touched her forehead to mine, passing me a handheld radio before running for the airplane. I heard the vehicle's engine turn on as I entered the garage and grinned at the sight of the six-wheeled transport van. The tires were huge, with thick treads, and Tripp stood on the step up near the driver's seat. He passed each of us handguns, the same ones we'd taken out in Madagascar, and I shoved mine into my parka's pocket. I had the tokens on me, and feeling the weight of the four otherworldly hexagons centered me, despite our situation. The believers were coming for us. The clock was ticking.